Today, we're going to talk about planning and procrastination. And the reason for that has to do with the fact that 2 weeks ago, we did a session on balance and margin. So I just thought this is a natural follow-up. And as I've said before, for a lot of us, our world does not go from January to December. It sort of goes from August to July. You know, some of you are getting ready for school, but even if not, you're coming off a vacation. You're kind of recalibrating, refocusing. So we're going to spend some time today talking about a very precious commodity, time. And I will at the end recommend some various websites that at both the Probe website and the Point of View website, in case you find some of this would be something you'd like to look at again. If you're a visitor to the class, look at the bottom of your handout and you'll notice that at PrestonwoodExamine.org we already have a PDF of this presentation. So you could go there later and look at it, or if you have a smartphone or a tablet, you could be following along right now. And in one of the articles I'm going to recommend later, it asks some really good questions. How many of us would drop $20 bills out of our car window as we drive? Well, we wouldn't waste money. How many of us would smash our prized possessions just for relaxation? Of course not. You know, when it comes to material things, we value them. But in the same way, even though we sometimes would never think about squandering material possessions, some of us sometimes squander our most valuable resource, and that is time. And let's face it, I mean, all of us at one time or another have procrastinated, right? I mean, so we're all in the process of learning how to do this. And one of the things is that I want just to understand, as we get into this idea of planning and procrastination and time management, a lot of it has to do with self-regulation. As I've said before, if I want to really understand what your priorities are, I just need to look at your checkbook. We need to look at your date timer or your smartphone or whatever and see how you spend your time and your money. And we've already sort of talked about some of your valuable possessions like money, but what about your valuable possession of time? And telling someone who procrastinates to buy a weekly planner is like telling somebody who has chronic depression, just cheer up. So we're going to focus some time, first of all, on what does the Bible have to say about planning? And again, Jarrett Stevens and I do not actually talk to each other, but his message today is on the book of Proverbs, and he gave us probably more, you know, verses from Proverbs. So as you will see, I really spent my time in the area of the Proverbs talking about the issue of time and planning. So let's look at a few of those, and again, those either you can write down in your handout, or again, the PDF is available later. But in Proverbs 14, for example, it says, "The simple believes everything, but the prudent gives thought to his steps." Now that, of course, is the idea of making wise decisions, which again we've just talked about in the earlier message by Dr. Jarrett Stevens, but it also relates to making and wisely taking your steps. A very important passage in terms of understanding God's will is sometimes to recognize that God gives wisdom of many counselors. And in Proverbs 15, "Without counsel, plans fail, but with many advisors they succeed." Perhaps you have this idea, this is something I want to do, and you go and talk to some godly people and they say, that's a good idea. Or some people say, nope, I think that's a really bad idea. That is, again, another way I think sometimes we can discern what God is calling for us to do. Here's another one. Proverbs 16, verse 3. "Commit your work to the Lord and your plans will be established." Doesn't that dovetail with what we just heard today in terms of lean not on your own understanding, but instead lean upon the Lord. And then perhaps one of the most famous passages is Proverbs 16, 9. "But the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps." So obviously we need to plan our way. Some of our translations say the heart of man plans his way. Because really in the Hebrew, the heart and the mind were sort of the same idea, the center of your being, but the Lord directs his steps. So Jarrett Stevens gave us a lot of Proverbs, but he also quoted from the book of Isaiah. So again, it matches very well. One of the more famous passages in Isaiah 32, verse 8, "But the noble man devises noble plans. and by noble plans he stands. So again, I use these verses sometimes to tell you what you already believe. I think this is a group of individuals. I know so many of you. You already probably have some plans. I know some of you maybe in a business have a 5-year plan. Some of you have some plans for what you're going to do over the next couple of months. We're already making plans for what we're going to be doing November 2nd through the 4th. Some of us, you're already planning for the fact that in 2 weeks we have a summit here at the church, and we're going to be planning for the class. But I do have some of my charismatic friends that say, no, I don't think planning's biblical. I just let the Lord just direct me every step of the way. Well, I want to help you understand that when we look at planning, I think we can even see that when we look at various individuals in the scriptures, we see that they also were involved in strategic planning. In your hand yet, I've given you a couple of illustrations. Let's think about Moses. Moses was a strategic planner. Maybe not at first, but certainly he learned to be so. And for example, later on in the book of Exodus, learned that Moses was really struggling with the tremendous weight and burden that was leading the nation of Israel out of Egypt. And so that's when then Jethro comes to him, recognizing that he's overwhelmed, and proposed to him that the burden of leadership should be shared. And so you see some of that. And they really, in a sense, set up a strategic plan by learning to delegate the work so that the load would be spread among a number of individuals. And later when we talk about some of the cures, we'll come back to that. You think of Joshua. I mean, think of the number of times Joshua shows some kind of strategic plan. And even when you talk about Joshua and Jericho, now if you think about that, God could have simply said, look, zap it. Then that's the end of Jericho. But instead, what does he say? March around 7 times. And the last time, march around 7 times. And then participate in that. Have ownership in it. And of course, all through the book of Joshua, you have different aspects of planning. Perhaps the greatest planner in the Old Testament, without a doubt, is Nehemiah. I mean, if you ever want to talk about leadership and planning and strategic planning and organization, how many times have we all heard from Pastor Graham, from Chuck Swindoll, from a variety of other people, a great series on how Nehemiah was a planner. I mean, we see how he developed strategic plans, how he worked with various groups of individuals to achieve his goal. I mean, you see him assessing the damage of the walls. You see him securing the resources in a number of different ways. He established leaders. He had distributed assignments. He made people responsible for that part of the wall near their own house, so they were, in a sense, had ownership in it. And it really, really from start to finish, Nehemiah just shows us the importance of planning. And so certainly we can see that in his life. Another example is David. I saw one recently where somebody was saying, if nothing else, David was good at not only as a king, but even before he was in that position, he assesses the weakness of Goliath and takes him on, and then uses that same kind of strategic thinking and perception, first as the leader of the soldiers. You know, Saul kills his thousands, David kills his tens of thousands, later as the king of Israel. We could go through quite a number of others, but let's jump to the New Testament. Even Jesus himself, you know, begins his ministry by calling men to be his disciples, teaching them while they're on earth, sending them in the world to proclaim the gospel, as we looked at a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the book of Acts. Everything from the cross to the grave to the resurrection to the ascension, we see planning there. And then, of course, we've been working our way through 1st and 2nd Corinthians and then through the book of Acts. And how many times have we seen this strategic planning of Paul and establishing the church, choosing key cities, as we pointed out sometimes in the map, these were the key cities that would not only be the place where the gospel would be spread along the Roman road, but also in terms of influential individuals, preaching first in the synagogue, then later in the marketplace, developing key leaders, taking the time to go back and visit them again, either by visiting them face to face or with his letters. So if nothing else, we see just a tremendous amount of emphasis in the scriptures about planning. I won't go any longer than that because I think this is an already convinced audience. So let's talk about the downside of that, because, you know, plans only succeed when the plans are implemented. If you have a plan but you don't implement it, it's just wishful thinking, isn't it? So that brings us into a perspective really on this issue of procrastination. And if you find yourself saying, you know, that you've kind of hit a sore point. I've been in church a long time, never heard anybody speak on procrastination. Well, now you have. Okay, are there any biblical resources on it? Yes, I'm going to point you to a week of radio programs we did a while back. It's been years, but anyway, well back on the Probe radio program, and Steve Cable did that. Also, one of my commentaries, and just try to give you some perspective on that. Because if you think about this, as you look at some of the latest statistics, by and large, if you take the most recent surveys, they estimate that probably about 20% of people identify themselves as chronic procrastinators. So if this is a representative sample, you can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, there it is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There, you know, you could begin to say that this is not just a small issue, but it's certainly one. And for some people, procrastination becomes a lifestyle. They miss opportunities to buy tickets. They miss signing up to go to our November 2nd to 4th trip because they always were going to get around to it, but just never got to. They file their income tax late. All the accountants here shaking their head. Yeah, I know all about that. You know, always filing the extensions. And they leave Christmas shopping to Christmas Eve. Once or twice, I've gone out on Christmas Eve just to watch harried people running through the stores. Just, this is incredible that we do this to ourselves. So, what about this? Let's see if we can get some perspective. First of all, some of the new books that have come out, and I'm going to mention a couple along the way, say that sometimes the biggest problem is procrastinators tell lie to themselves. They'll say, I'll feel more like doing this tomorrow. You know, the mañana mindset. I work best under pressure. You know, when that guillotine axe is coming down, that's when actually I'm able to get my best work done. They oftentimes look for distractions, especially ones that don't take a lot of commitment on their part. And that's why one of the greatest ways to procrastinate is to what? Check your emails or go on YouTube or whatever, you know. I mean, they're just all sorts of things that make it even easier in this modern technological society to actually procrastinate. Okay, one of the handouts I gave you there was talked about conquering the time killer here for just a minute. And so we just want to start looking at a couple of verses, but also just some other things. Benjamin Franklin put it this way, dost thou love life? Then do not squander time, for that's the stuff life is made of. And so again, sometimes we would be horrified if we saw somebody squandering their money. But so often we tend to squander what? Our time. Kind of the key verse, if you're a procrastinator, I suggested a couple of weeks ago, you might want to get out some index cards and write down some verses. One of those would be Ephesians 5, verses 15 and 16. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making what? The most of your time, because the days are evil. If that was true in the first century, how much more true is it in the 21st century? And for those of us that have gray hair or no hair at all, we recognize how time really just kind of evaporates very, very quickly. When I said to my daughter, who when she had her 30th birthday, I said, I can remember vividly when Suzanne had her 30th birthday, and now you're having your 30th birthday. You know, from birth to 30 seemed like a long period of time, but from 30 to 60, it was like a eye blink. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And it's just something to, maybe if nothing else, warn the younger people in the audience, you know, right now it just seems like it lasts forever, especially when you're in a math class and it just seems like time just stops. But I'll tell you, from about the age of 20 on, it just zooms past you in ways you cannot possibly imagine. Okay, again, if we're honest with ourselves, we'll have to admit that sometimes we're even uncomfortable with this idea of time stewardship. Some of you might say, I don't know why he's covering this today. It just makes me feel really kind of a little too convicted. But again, that's part of it. Procrastination is hands down our favorite form of self-sabotage. I'm going to come back to that because there's a new book just came out in which they, in a sense, I think, with all sorts of studies, document what we already already sort of know in the first place. But how do we think about this idea of time? It's important to recognize that time is something we find ourselves in right now, but eventually we're headed towards eternity. We'll be outside of time. And so where did time come from? Well, you can go back to Genesis 1. In Genesis 1, it says that God created time. There was no space, no time. God creates that. And so we are time-bound creatures. And God says it is good, it is good, it is very good. Genesis 1 is the number of times we see that God says that it is good, and He's placed us in the midst of time. Then we also recognize that God transcends time. We're time-bound creatures, but God is outside of that. And I give you just a couple of verses which talk about the fact that God exists in the past, in the present, and in the future simultaneously. Hebrews 13, verse 8, 1 Peter 1, 2 Peter 3. And then it also admonishes us that our time on earth is precious and is fleeting. You know, one of the questions that was asked of Billy Graham is, what surprises you most about your life? That time is so quick, that time is so fleeting, that there is just only a great opportunity, and it can come and it will vanish. And so James 4, 1 Peter 1 are some examples. And of course, I just gave you the verse from Ephesians 5, that God is concerned how we use our time here on earth. So I thought just real quickly, I would look at a couple of passages and show how many times the English word time shows up, and how many times when we look at that, God's saying, you really need to be a much better steward of your time. Let's look at just a couple of passages. Notice this one, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 14. We read that a number of months ago, but let me go back and look at the underlying passages. For the love of Christ controls us, having concluded this, that one died for all, therefore all died, and he died for all, so that what? They who have time on this earth might no longer use their time for themselves, but for him who died and rose again on our behalf. Notice the emphasis on time. Time is precious. It is scarce. It is a resource. And are we going to use it for ourselves? We're going to use it for the Lord. Now, again, that doesn't mean we shouldn't do things to help ourselves and to take care of ourselves. But again, it's a reminder, using time and not squandering time is important. Let's get another passage. This is in 1 Corinthians. So whether you eat or drink, however you what? Spend your time, use all of your time for the glory of God. Notice the number of times when Paul is writing, especially the church in Corinth, which was an affluent church, which was a decadent church. He's admonishing the believers, don't waste your time. You have an opportunity here in Corinth to make a difference. Don't squander it. Use your time effectively. How about this one? In 1 Corinthians 3, he's also talking about wood, hay, stubble, all those kinds of things. And here, now if any man builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each man's work will become evident, for the day will show it, because it is to be revealed, what? With fire. And the fire itself will test the quality of each man's work. If any man's work which he has built on it remains, he will receive a reward. If any man's work is burned up, he will suffer loss, though he himself will be saved, yet so as through fire. And again, he's speaking to believers. He's not talking about you're going to lose your salvation. He's talking about instead, are you going to just barely graduate, or you're going to graduate with honors? You know, some of us graduated magna cum laude, the rest of us graduated, Lordy, how come? You know, and that's what we don't want to end up like, you know, in that regard. Let's take another one. Why do we sometimes squander our time? Well, there are internal pressures that keep us from managing our time effectively, but there are also external forces. And that is one of the books we make available each week to those of you that are visitors, is my book on spiritual warfare, also an excellent book by Pastor Graham that's in the bookstore. And it reminds us that Satan and the world system really want us to waste our time. If you think about that, and pass into eternity having accomplished nothing of eternal value. C.S. Lewis wrote about that in what are called what? The Screwtape Letters. You ever read the Screwtape Letters? You know, just a reminder that, you know, if I can distract these people, if they can just waste their time, if they aren't involved in strategic things, that's gain for the prince of darkness. Therefore, anything that causes us to waste our time is a spiritual issue. And I thought it was interesting, this quote that was in one of the articles. Not usually am I quoting Henry David Thoreau to emphasize a spiritual principle, but in this case I think it's right. As if you could kill time without injuring eternity. I mean, we're time bound, but what we do in time will echo through eternity, will have an impact on eternity. So again, it would cause us to be good stewards of our time. Okay, final comments before we turn it back over to Parker. First of all, the consequences, as well as, you know, the particular cures that we can begin to apply. First of all, what are the consequences? You know, when you put off yard work, your expense reports, if you're a student here, put off your term papers, you put off reading the Bible, you know, that's what happens with procrastination. I love this little quote I found. They said procrastination was the source of my sorrow. I don't know what the big word means. I'll look it up tomorrow. But there is a new book that had just come out. The book is entitled Soon, and it is an overdue history of procrastination from Leonardo to Darwin and from you and me. And in this book that looks at procrastination, it finds that sometimes people procrastinate or even postpone projects so they have kind of a self-serving excuse. That is, if they wait until the last moment and they do a poor job, they can always say, well, if I'd had more time, I would have done a better job. And so this is what psychologists call self-handicapping. So this is a secular book. I'm going to mention some Christian resources, but this was one that really looked at all these surveys. And like I oftentimes said on my radio program, you know, we have these thick books and these million-dollar surveys, which basically come to the same conclusion we've come to before. If you've ever heard somebody procrastinating, you know, sometimes they do that because then I had to rush at the last moment to finish it, and so that gives me an excuse that if it isn't good, well, if I'd had more time, I would have done better. There's another reason, and that is some people postpone projects because they think that they perform better under pressure. That deadline has to be there. The 11th hour is when I get all my creative work done. But the reality is that isn't the case. There was a study done of university students who procrastinate and found that those who procrastinate got lower grades. They had higher stress. They also tended to drink more. There's just a lot of negatives to that as well. And if nothing else, we can look at this from a Christian point of view and recognize that what does the scriptures tell us to do? It tells us to keep our behavior excellent among the Gentiles and to work heartily as unto the Lord. So those are some of the consequences. And if you think about history, certainly the scriptures get into that. You know, Israel delayed entering the promised land, ended up wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. If you've not seen the story of Napoleon at Waterloo in 1850, Napoleon was ready to attack Wellington's British army at dawn, but delayed the attack. I watched a little YouTube video recently that went into it in more detail, and he could have attacked and probably would have won the day, but by waiting so long, the delay allowed the Prussians to attack his flank and turn what would have been a French victory into a defeat. A classic illustration of how Napoleon met his Waterloo simply because he waited too long. So what are the causes? Well, I think I've already alluded to some of those, but let's talk about it a little bit more. One of those could be laziness, you know? Let's face it, sometimes we're just lazy. Or desire to avoid negative feelings that cause us to delay a task that might be difficult or unpleasant. And so that's one of the issues. But if you think about it, procrastinators aren't necessarily born that way. I mean, some might have a little bit of a predisposition. But if you've ever seen a young child, they're ready to tackle little whatever, you know. They're not hanging around waiting. Matter of fact, waiting is the difficulty usually for a young child, right? Getting involved instantaneously is the nature of that as well. And yet we can recognize that there are some real downsides to that. And one more proverb, and then I will end on the Proverbs, but Proverbs 24, in the midst of all these Proverbs that usually just have kind of a one-sentence statement by Solomon, we have this story in the midst of Proverbs 24. And the story goes as this. I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. And behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Looks like my garage. Its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. And I reflected upon it, and I looked and received instruction. And what was that? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber, and your want like an armed man. You know, there are consequences to always postponing. There's a consequence to always procrastinating. And here he uses this vivid image of what could have been a wonderful estate that instead is broken down. The walls are broken down. The surface is covered with nettles. The whole area is overcome with thistles. Suzanne grew up in a farm community, and you go by some of these farms and they're just pristine. You go by one, you're going, what's wrong on here? You know, this one needs a lot of work. And here it's just a great illustration in Proverbs 24. Another reason for procrastination is perfectionism or the fear of failure. That is, you know, it's got to be perfect, and if it's not perfect, I won't do it at all. Or I'm afraid that I'm going to fail, so I'm going to, as we just mentioned a minute ago, kind of self-hurt, you know, self-apply these issues. And if I can't do the job perfectly, I'll give myself an excuse for doing it poorly. Some believe they need uninterrupted time to do a perfect job. I just don't have enough time. I want 5 minutes here and 15 minutes here and 20 minutes, but I need hours. And so they never get it done. Another reason, sometimes resentment. Guys, we can relate to this. When you've been told for the third time to do a project, you know, you want to procrastinate just out of resentment. No, I'm tired of being told, whether it's your spouse, your mother, your whatever, you know, stop bugging me. And so that's another one of those causes. Which brings us finally to the cures. Because I think I've identified the problems. What are the cures? Well, first of all, one of the things we say in one of our articles is probe your problem. Ask yourself, you know, when I feel stuck or you find yourself procrastinating, what is it? What's going on here? What am I feeling? How could I maybe begin to turn this around? What might be contributing to my procrastination? Are you trying to avoid an unpleasant activity? Are you motivated by resentment? Are you seeking perfection? What it might be. And so then, once you have identified the problem, point number two is what? Pray about your problem. If it's laziness, maybe I'm just lazy and I just never get to it. Well, then I think you should pray for what? Self-control. Maybe the issue is resentment. I'm tired of being told what to do. Well, then pray for forgiveness for having a bad attitude towards whoever is hounding you to get that project done. If it's perfectionism, acknowledge that we have our significance in Christ, not in our performance. And so, again, perfectionism surfaces for different reasons. Identify what the reason is, and then pray about that reason. Here's something else. Another P, in addition to praying about it, priorities. Set proper ones. You know, utilize some of the strategy we discussed 2 weeks ago in terms of margin, in terms of balance. If you didn't have a chance to hear that, Parker's been very good to put that up on the website. Not only do we have the PDF up there, but even you have the audio that Fred puts up there so you can hear it again. Might focus on your high priority projects, not your lower ones. And maybe if nothing else, just seek Christ. You know, lean not on your own understanding, as we learned this morning, but lean upon Christ and pray about what He might be directing you to do. Another P we talked about, you know, probe the issues and pray about it, also set priorities. Another P would be perspective-based planning. You know, most of us, I think, have been surprised by unintentional procrastination when we thought we had plenty of time. And maybe sometimes we run into a situation where the task ends up being harder than it really looked like at the beginning. And so, again, that's why we took you back to Proverbs. Plan it out. Begin to think about the steps. Even on my phone, I have something that is, helps me organize my to-do steps and has a place where you can have your goal, and then you can break it down, as I'm going to mention in just a minute, into the necessary steps. Sometimes it just looks overwhelming. Some of you have projects, you just say, there is no way I can get this done this week. There have been times I've come into the office and say, there's no way I can get this done in a week. And by noon, I got most of it done. It was just overwhelming me only because I wasn't breaking it down into the sequential steps necessary to get it done. Another key verse, if you want to put this one on an index card, put it on your refrigerator, put it on your computer, would be this. The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty comes surely to poverty. Sometimes not taking the time to plan. We all know some people that plan too much, and it's ready, aim, ready, aim, ready. You know, we've all been there. And I've used to work with some person that was like that. I also worked with somebody else. Fire, ready, aim, oh, fire. You know, they went too fast. And so there's a sense in which you can overplan, and there's a time which you sometimes can act too hastily and can make a mistake. So there's a balance, and we talked about that 2 weeks ago. Another one, I've already alluded to this, but let's talk about this. Break the task into subtasks. You know, what other tasks must be accomplished before I do this task? Sometimes we jump ahead and we realize, you know, if I just backed up a little bit and planned a little bit, I would be able to do this in a sequential way. But because I jumped in too quickly, I didn't do some of the initial planning that got me there. Again, ask yourself, how long should the task take? And more importantly, what are the consequences of delay? Sometimes they say, oh, I'll just get to that tomorrow. Well, there's a price to pay sometimes when you delay too long. And maybe the other one that we saw with Moses, are there some tasks that can be delegated to someone else? You don't have to do it all. So again, some great material. One other P, since I'm giving you lots of P's today, with alliteration, proactive partnering. Don't try to tackle procrastination problems on your own. You know, Galatians 6, you know, talks about bearing one another's burdens. You know, maybe you need somebody to provide some guidance. You know, the wisdom of many counselors, we just looked at that in Proverbs. Maybe you've got a project and you say, this is overwhelming, and I'm really outside of my comfort zone. I'm outside of my area of expertise. Maybe I need somebody to give me some guidance. Or maybe I know how to do it, but I just know that I never get it done. So maybe I need an accountability partner, somebody to say, hey, how you doing? You know, and that accountability part used to be hard because they'd had to get together with you. Now they could just, you know, send a text every day, say, okay, how are we doing on this? How are we doing on this? You know, by the third text, you're going, okay, I better get to this project because the accountability has helped me achieve some success. So those are just a couple other ones. And again, the solution to procrastination is not working. Workaholism. We talked about that 2 weeks ago when we talked about balance. But Jesus told his disciples, come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest a while. As I said a couple of weeks ago, you know, I really benefited a lot from Dr. Richard Swenson. And one of the lines he used one time, I think it was at Mount Hermon we were there, he said, there's nowhere in the scriptures where I see where Jesus ran. You know, Jesus never was in a hurry. Sometimes Jesus was really kind of slow in getting to certain things, Lazarus being one example. And there are times when Jesus would have them come away and rest. And Mark 6 talks about that. And recognize, again, the importance of sometimes resting. You've heard the story of the two lumberjacks where one was chopping wood all day, and after a while he noticed that this other lumberjack, who was taking breaks, was chopping more wood than he was. And he said, this doesn't make sense because I've been chopping all day, and he takes a break about every half an hour, hour, and finally says, how did you chop more wood than I did? Because when I was sitting there, I was sharpening my blade, you know, and there's a time in which sometimes you need to sharpen your blade and take a time for rest as well. Well, if you find yourself saying, okay, I'd like to know a little bit more about some of this, let me mention a couple of things. First of all, I did a commentary a while back on that book that I just mentioned a minute ago, soon, and you can find that on our Point of View website, pointofview.net. I do a daily commentary Monday through Friday, and that commentary came out, was it April 13th, so you can find it. Go to pointofview.net, read all about that. Now, you can read the book, or you can read the Kirby Anderson Cliff Notes. Either way, you got it made, you know, but it gives you a little bit of a summary on that, on procrastination, on that secular book. But again, if you found that some of the material I've covered you'd like to get into a little more depth, because I'm just giving you the Cliff Notes version, Steve Cable on our staff has done a week of radio programs on procrastination, in which many of those verses and others which I didn't have time to get to, because I always like to end on time, because after all, we've got to go eat here in just a minute. But those you can find at probe.org, and Steve Cable's the vice president at Probe. And interestingly enough, used to work with Viasat. You heard of Viacom. He used to be the vice president of Viasat. And then after he did well financially, he is now working with us at Probe. And so he has done some great work on time management and business and all sorts of things. But this one is a whole week of radio programs on procrastination, conquering the time killer. So if you wanted to go there and find some of those resources, those are available as well. And finally, just again, let me mention real quickly before I turn it back over to Parker that we're going to have Dr. Jarrett Stevens in studio this Thursday at 1 o'clock. And you can come to the studio. Like, we're going to have some food there at about noon. So if you, want to take your lunch hour and just meet him and then get back to work, you can. Or if you'd like to sit there and watch the interview from 1 to 3, that's fine. If you say, well, there's no way I can make it to the studio and you'd like to listen to it, it's on AM 1160 and we'll have that up there as well. And it also is broadcast on Facebook. And so because it's there, Facebook Live, you could also leave a message. So if you'd like to call in or you'd like to say hi to him or whatever, we thought it would be fun. And this is his first book, The Mountains Are Calling. I think it's a great resource, and I'm looking forward to my interview with Jarrett Stevens on Thursday. Parker?